Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces podcast episode. Looking at my phone to see what episode it is. 194. Thank you all for tuning in, guys. I'm joined today by Steve McNeil. It's a fantastic chat. We get really into it, nerding out over comedy and over games. So I'm going to keep the intro brief, but I'm going to mention that the reaction to last week's Mother's Day special was overwhelming. Easily the biggest reaction I've had of the year, if not of all time. If you missed it, I did a Mother's Day special, which was my mum talking about her mum. Me talking to my mum about her mum. And I said at the time it might be my favourite one I've recorded. I didn't know how it'd be. I lined it up and I'd said to my mum, look, if it's a 10-minute one, it's a 10-minute one. Ended up being over 90 minutes, I think, and just absolute gold. Story after story. It was a great time. So I hope you all enjoyed that. We are brought to you as ever by speechdevelopmentrecords.com. We've got tons of good stuff there. The new black denim jackets with the logos on the back and all that. We sold half of what we made in the first week, which is insane. I was expecting them to last a few months. But of all of those sold, three, I had emails that the patches were coming off the back. And that's a tiny percentage. It's only three. But because of that, we've taken them off sale briefly because I'm getting them all checked and making sure they're all okay or the rest are okay. Because, yeah, we like to put out high quality stuff. It's annoying a few people. A few people are like, they're not available anymore. Have they sold out? They've not sold out, but I need to make sure. To be quite frank, they're the most I've spent on an item and they're the most I've charged for an item because they're the most I've spent on an item. So I need to make sure that they're good quality, man. So we're just tweaking them to get them to the absolute peak. Everyone else has been delighted. I wear mine all the time. The quality is insane. But as I said, there was a small percentage had an issue. So I'd rather take them all off and make sure we've got that issue nailed than sell you guys poor quality stuff. But speechdevelopmentrecords.com is the place to go for all your merch. If you're a fan of the podcast and you listen for free, in this podcast, we talk a lot about the changing ways of earning. And Patreon is one of them, Twitch, all sorts of other stuff. I've chosen not to go the Patreon and Twitch route and stuff like that. But I hope, obviously I've got sponsors, so that covers some bills. But I hope that if you're into the podcast, you'll go every now and then and spend some money in the web store to support the free podcast that you get every week. So yeah, anyway, let's jump into this. It's a wonderful chat. Yeah, we get to nerd out, and we had a lovely time. And I can't recommend Go 8-Bit enough, and I'm looking forward to catching Wi-Fi Wars. But we talk about all of that, so let's get into episode 194 of the Distraction Pieces podcast with Steve McNeil. Right, I'm joined today by Steve McNeil. How are you?
I am very, very good. How are you?
I'm good. This is an exciting episode and conversation I've been looking forward to. And it's one where I need to rein myself in
right. And
make the episode actually about you and what you do rather than just let's talk about games. Because I'm a big fan of games gaming. And I don't get to do as much of it as I used to, but yeah, it's also a subject that I don't get to discuss much. And you, obviously, I heard of you initially from Go 8-Bit,
yep.
From Dara O'Brien's Go 8-Bit.
That's right.
He gets the
name of
title,
the most famous one, so he gets to win.
And I loved it. I think I feel at times that this podcast is sponsored by Dave, because I think Dave are really good. Dave and Comedy Central as well recently kind of, I think, had a sit down and realised, right, people mainly watch us for repeats and reruns.
Yeah.
Is that going to last? And they both started making original content.
Yeah.
And they both, I think, smashed out of the park. And yeah. I think Taskmaster, Go 8-Bit and Alan Davies, Untitled.
Yeah, yeah.
Are three of the most consistently enjoyable shows.
That's lovely.
I've watched.
And, yeah.
And Go 8-Bit was one that just, it came out of nowhere, and I was like, well, that sounds like everything I'd enjoy. And then I watched it, it was like, oh, it is.
Good. Oh, so, I'm glad.
And so how is that kind of, it's for people who don't know, it's a show that's...
Yeah, so the pitch originally was comedians playing video games drunk in a cupboard when we were doing it up at the Edinburgh Festival. So
amazing.
It was in a shitty little room up at the Edinburgh Festival, midnight on a Friday and Saturday night. And it was genuinely, we were going to go and do a sketch show, and we didn't, because we had a pilot sitcom in development. It didn't go anywhere, but we hadn't written our sketch show because we were a sketch double act.
Yeah.
And we just had this idea that maybe if we just got, you know, like comedy friends, like we had Josh Woody come up there the first year, you know, people like that, or funny people, if we got them drunk, handed them a controller and let them play Mario Kart and give each other grief, that would probably be enough of a thing that people would enjoy watching it.
Yeah.
And it'd just be fun, because Edinburgh's a long month and it's miserable.
Well, that's one of the things that's great, because it strikes me as, and some of the best things, in my opinion, are this, the shows that go on in Edinburgh that have primarily been made for the comedians.
Yeah.
So it's great that they get an audience, but there's certain shows that you're like, I know I'm about a week in, I'm knackered, and I need a break. And there's certain shows, and Brendan Burns and Colt Cabana's
the
comedians watching wrestling are examples of that, where it's just, it doesn't have to be this big set performance. It's come and watch. And
for
comedians, it's generally going to be your mates there.
Yeah.
As the show, it's
the one time in the year where we're all together. It's like, you're at college for a month and we're all in the same place.
Yeah.
And I think you are all doing your shows every day, and you get the ups and downs of press or bad audiences and all the things. And a gig like that's so easy to book when you're in, because actually you go, look, you're probably sick of doing your show, and late night, you don't want to go and do Late and Live and get bottled off at 3 a.m. I get you drunk and let you play Mario Kart for 10 minutes? And it's sort of a no-brainer. So we've done we did it at McCunclyffe Comedy Festival as well,
right?
Sort of around the way. And it's just, it's never been an issue getting comedians to do it, because it's so low pressure.
It's
the lowest pressure gig. And gamers generally, mate, we don't really have any trouble at any of our live shows. It's just the people, it self-selects. So dickheads don't come to a video gaming show because they think it's for nerds.
It's for nerds,
and they're right. So all the nerds come, and we're all nice to each other and have a nice time.
And
so you'll
have a lovely, peaceful time there.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's the only gig at midnight on a Friday night in Edinburgh that isn't carnage, I should think.
Yeah,
it's lovely.
It's one of those things, and we'll talk about this a lot, I think, because I want to talk about Twitch as well, because Twitch is something that on paper you look at and go, phew, who wants to watch people play computer games?
Yeah.
And if you go slightly further than that initial throwaway thought, you remember, I've spent years watching my mates play video games, passing the controller, enjoying it. And I've had times recently where my mate Chris and my mate Mark had come over for certain games we're playing.
Yeah.
And there's been points that the bit I'm enjoying the least is the bit where I'm playing.
Right,
because I've enjoyed, like, either particularly with Doom, my mate Chris is a lot better at Doom than me.
Yeah.
So it was enjoyable.
You want to see the game,
you just have
and
another
you'll never
go.
Get there.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm like, I'm all right at it, but I get more fun watching him smash it.
Do it well,
than
me
go, I've missed
doing the same level 20
the double
times
jump again.
Yeah.
So there is something in that on Twitch. And then with Go 8-Bit, it takes it to a next level, because one of the great breakthroughs in comedy on TV, I think, was, number one, the panel show, but more importantly, the shooting stars realising that no one really cares who wins in a panel show.
Yeah.
And what Go 8-Bit does is cancel that, because everyone cares who wins on computer games.
Yeah,
if you're against mates, suddenly you care.
Yeah.
And that was what was kind of beautiful. In general, on a panel show, I've never remembered, other than QI maybe, because that's genuinely a bit highbrow and things, but other than that, you never pay attention to which team won and
no, it's just stuff,
things like
it?
That. It's who said the funniest stuff.
Yeah, but also, like, people watching it win, but also the guests care as well. Like, often people will go on a panel show and you just go, well, you know, you get paid a few grand and I do a couple of hours and whatever, and then it vanishes into the ether. It's just disposable.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, Manford, because he claimed he couldn't get the controls right on FIFA. He could, but he was just rubbish at it. But he was genuinely angry and genuinely gutted, because he knows for the next 5 years his family at every gathering are going to give him shit.
Yeah.
Being rubbish at FIFA on the telly. So it matters. Daniel Sloss as well, you know, the big gamers who come to the show,
when
you beat them, they hate it.
And the pressure comes on when you're in the team. So the team captains are you and Sam, and you always have a guest with you.
Each. Yep.
And one point of the show is when they get to say or pick their game, yep. the game that they love the most or they're the best at.
Yeah.
That's when the pressure is horrendous because that's the one you're presenting as your skill. And the reality is the best people at every game are the people who played it loads and got brilliant at it. And the people who have never played it in their life. That middle area is a grey area because you've started to understand what you need to do to be good. So
a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous
goes
thing.
Out the way. Exactly. Yeah, so you've not got to the skill level. So you've either got the luck and innocence of never playing it or the expertise.
Yeah.
So when you've presented a game as your game and then it's heartbreaking.
The grief they get as well is when they're on the show. They'll say, you know, I love this game. Like I think Robert Webb, Michelle Webb, he picked Jetpack and he was actually good at it and he won that one. But the point is, he loved Jetpack when he was a kid. But he's not played it for 30 years.
Of course.
Years. So he gets grief if he's doing something wrong. But you go, why would he be good at it? Just because he loved something.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean he's like, you know, I was probably quite good at hopscotch when I was at school. But if you put me on one now, I probably couldn't get my way around there.
But that is a thought process that takes a single jump more than you might give in your thought to get to. So you will remember, I loved that game, I was amazing at it.
Yeah.
You won't then analyse, oh, I've not played it in 20
look
years.
Like a prick on the telly.
Yeah, you'll just think, oh, I was amazing at that. It's like, but you've not kept your skills up. You're not gonna do anything that you've not done in 20 years and think, I can do that on TV in front of other people.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a really interesting one. I had a thing where on the last on UFC 2, I'm a big fan of the UFC games because I'm a fan of the sport. I'd played the first one and I'd got half decent.
Right.
And I like on social media a bit of bravado. So when the second one was coming out, I said to people, look, I'm going to give my gamer tag out. You can play me. You will lose. But not only will you lose, I'll let you choose your fighter first. Then I will choose my fighter based on one of their big real life rivals. And I will beat you in the style of that fighter.
That's amazing.
I really hyped it up. Everyone remembers that. No one remembers that by the end of that weekend of playing, I had a 50-50 record. But because of the bravado, I'm going to beat you all. So the few
times... I think Scroobius is incredible at UFC.
The few times it did pay off and I beat someone in the exact way they'd beaten that person or something like that, it's like, wow.
That's the narrative.
The times someone just clipped me and knocked me out, it was fluke. So it was kind of... it became part of it. But so how's it been transitioning it from... a fringe show, which is essentially, because again, the crazy part there is you've kind of made that show, this is going to sound like an insult, but with zero ambition, because the idea is that you're messing about with your mates. You've done it as an easier thing. Rather than going, oh, we're going to do this sketch piece at Edinburgh that we hope gets seen by the BBC and turned into a show or Channel 4 and so on and so forth. You've gone, oh, let's just do something that we just enjoy.
Yeah, our career is over. Let's just get drunk and play video games.
And that's the one that then gets picked up. Yeah. So you've then got
We were done. Me and Sam were done when we did that show.
Yeah. So what was the case there? You'd talk, because Edinburgh is notorious for the corpses of comedians as such.
Especially sketch as well. Try to get a sketch show away is almost impossible. There's so many incredible comedians from when we were doing sketch that are now just not doing anything because they just couldn't get anything away. And we were at that point, when we started doing it, we agreed we'd do three Edinburghs and we'd try to, you know, get somewhere by then. And the third show got longlisted for the Comedy Award because you sort of get a whisper if you do.
Yeah.
And then it didn't get shortlisted.
Right.
And I think if we'd have got shortlisted, that might have given us that little bump to get our names around a bit more into the thing. But we just fell slightly short. And then this sitcom opportunity came up at the BBC and we thought, okay, well, we best invest heavily in that. But that sort of swallowed our time. So for a very small amount of money to option an idea, which is actually based on a sketch, which is on YouTube with Tom Nelstrop was in it. So I'll send you a link as usual.
Yeah.
So we spent a long time doing that. And then the weird thing about telly, because I have a strange relationship with Great Bit as well, which no doubt we'll talk about. But the weird thing about telly is it offers you the taste, if you're starting out in it, that you might get the thing that you dreamed of and you've worked for 10 years for, but it will ask so much of you and there'll be so many hurdles in the way. And that...
I was going to say, it can be a poison chalice.
It definitely is.
It will then stunt your ability to create purely because you'll constantly be thinking, oh, so what do they want? What do I need to put in this to make them like it? Rather than... Again, what the success of something like Go Ape is you weren't thinking that, and that can be a real...
Which really is sort of like, in terms of the journey and where I'm at now, I think I mean, there's so much within that, but there was us getting so close and not quite getting the nomination for the comedy thing in 2012.
Yeah.
And then hanging everything on this sort of glimmer of hope with the sitcom, with the BBC, which, you know, I can't remember how much it was, but it would have been, if it was a grand, it was barely a grand.
Yeah.
And it consumed 6 months of our life.
It's
and went
the
through
promise,
loads of
isn't
versions.
It? It's the promise.
It was the taste
that's
of maybe.
Is.
But yeah. At that point, that was, like, knowing now with everything else, that was the promise that maybe if we worked really hard for the half a year, maybe for next to no money, they'd shoot a taster, like a 10-minute version of a script that might then become a pilot, that might then become a TV show. And so at the expense of us writing a new sketch show, which maybe we'd have, you know, gone on and done better creatively doing what we were doing, we were trying to jump through hoops and change the change of commissioners and controllers at BBC. And so we ended up with a 30-minute script that was useless to us and no other creative output for nearly 12 months.
Yeah.
And so,
crazy, isn't it? Because also it's all owned. So even if they don't, that's the weirdest part of those things is we've paid you to do it. We don't want it, but you can't
do
it.
Anything with it.
It's not yours. It's ours. And we're going to pop it while we're looking you in the eye. We're just going to pop that in the bin.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we go, see you later.
Oh, I've sort of worked really hard for ages and I've got no money. Can I do anything? And you go,
nope.
No. The guy who commissioned that's left and we don't want it.
Yeah.
But which is what happened. It was a guy called Simon London who picked it up. And then by the time it got finished, he moved on. He'd gone somewhere else. And the new guy didn't want it.
It's a heartbreaking one because there's no solution to it either. Because that's also how a lot of the successes happen.
It is. Also, I think the thing for me is that the thing that you have to remember, and it has been this journey with you know, the development of Go8Bit and all the things around that, is on a bad day, I get very upset about a lot of the things that have happened over the last 3 years in terms of professionally, because it's been very, very difficult for lots of reasons. But at the same time, 3 years ago, almost to the day, actually, as we're recording this, 3 years ago, I gave up my day job, and I have done nothing but be a bellend playing computer games for 3 years.
That's
and
you're saying,
this is a nice house.
Yeah.
It's going fine. I mean, my wife earns more money than me doing a proper job.
But I've
just played games and been a bellend. So on one hand, you go, it has been hard, and there's lots of frustrations there about a lot of things. But it's easy to forget how much of a gift and a privilege it is to get to do this sort of job. And you can get caught up in your own bullshit and your own ego and your vanity. But I've done nothing but be silly and play games for 3 years.
And that can happen when you've had that taste of, oh, you're going to do a sitcom, you're going to do this or you're going to do that.
Yeah.
You then, the reality is, if you'd never had that taste of a sitcom, there would be zero, it would be all celebration that you're doing this full time now and you've got a show that's had two series on Dave, had a spin-off show as well, and loads of other stuff. Whereas there's always that kind of, and again, it's similar in music. I remember the first single I did, we had no attention and it blew up and got in the top 40. We then, with our label, on the second album, spent all this time trying to find the best way to get in the charts, when the reality is, highest chart position we'd had was when we didn't think about that at all.
Yeah.
And that's the reason that when I did my solo record, I just went, I'm just going to put it out. And that's the second highest chart position I've had, because it wasn't that kind of, oh, what do they want? And we need to make it a little bit shorter, and we need to have the chorus here and things like that, because that's what radio like, and we can't do this and can't do that. Right. Anything like that, it starts to stun you and makes you think, or in a way, it robs you of your successes.
Because
there's always the shadow of the successes you didn't have, the potential successes.
Yeah, but then I think that's also, if you choose foolishly to try to do this, as whether it is music or comedy or acting or whatever it is, that frustration that you haven't got the next thing is entirely the same as that drive that is making you try to do this anyway.
Yeah,
so I don't, this sounds so wanky, but I think there are very few people who will choose to do something like this and ever be truly satisfied.
Yeah.
Because if you didn't have that insane drive to do better, why the fuck? Like, I turned down a hundred grand a year job in the fitness club franchising industry to start doing sketch comedy with Sam Pamphilon for no money in 2009.
Yeah,
and that's insane. I'd have so, like, I don't know what people think Go8Bit makes, but I have not made anywhere approaching that with a successful TV show. But I'd have killed myself if I'd have worked in fitness conferences. They were lovely, and I'm grateful for all the work they gave me when I needed it. But I had to do this. But because I need it and I want to succeed and do more, no matter how well it's going, I'll be going, oh, fucking hell. All right, well, great, it's gone well. Why haven't I got another TV show? Do you know what I mean?
That drive is key and important as well, because of exactly that. when you've not had those moments of success, you have a great delusion on how life-changing those moments of success are.
Yeah.
The dream of having a TV show, you're like, I'm sorted.
Yeah.
Then you have it, and not that much changes.
Nothing. And Guy, as you said, we recorded series 2 and 3 back-to-back, and yes. DLC, the spin-off show, which you were in between. So in a period of 2.5 months between February and April last year, 2017, I recorded 30 episodes of TV.
Yeah.
But 8 of those are still haven't been on the telly yet. They're going out in the next 8 weeks. So a year ago, I was in telly for 2.5 months and made loads of things. But for the last 12 months, I've been a father of a young kid.
Yeah.
Doing odds and sods and, you know, the occasional corporate and bits and bobs. But Go 8-Bit has nothing to do with who I have been as a person for the last year. Yeah. And yet, especially now it's back on telly, you know, I'm that bloke off of Go 8-Bit.
Yeah.
But it's got nothing to do with my life.
I haven't done anything like that in so long. It's fascinating, bizarre. Though. I always think one of the greatest tricks to play is find an industry that justifies your habits.
Right.
So although Go 8-Bit has had nothing to do with your life in the last 12 months, anytime you've wanted to play computer games, you can justify it as part of work and to do with work and not just you are wasting time and being a bum and sitting around and he's going, it's my job. If I don't know about these games, then
I've got to do it. Yeah, which is a bullshit justification, which
that's
I think
a great justification.
It really
as well.
Is. But I think what started to happen.
I have it with comic books and films and games and everything because it's all inspirational. It is. I have got inspiration for songs or podcasts or whatever else from TV, from a computer game, from this, from that. So
of course
you can kind of. It is important, but obviously you then have to have a brake pedal on that at some point.
You need somebody who exists outside of your bubble and go, you know you're taking the piss.
Exactly. And let's go back to that point then, at the fringe where it's kind of, in your mind at least, it's failed.
I think that's a key thing, because
in your mind it's failed, because I also think hindsight is a powerful thing, and there's points in our lives where it feels like it's all a massive failure. And when you look back, you're like, actually, we did 3 really progressively improving shows over that time, and they were good. And but because you're caught up in the, are you doing as good as that comedian? And is your room as big as that comedian? Yeah. It becomes, oh, it's a failure.
Yeah.
So in your mind at the time, you've got to the point of, this just ain't happening.
Yeah, well, the live sketch shows hadn't turned into anything because nobody had. Occasionally we submitted writing or audition for stuff, but we never really got into anything. So that had died. The sitcom had got shit canned. And because of that, we weren't going to go and do a 4th sketch show. So I said, let's not do it. And Sam said, let's just go and do the gaming thing anyway.
Yeah.
But we were done because me and Sam weren't friends before we did sketch. We sort of met and did comedy together. We're very close now, obviously.
So
it was really just we're fucked anyway. But I was up there doing a play, and Sam said, well, I'll just come up at the weekends. We'll do that. It'll be a bit of fun, and it's a nice final hurrah. And then, if you looked at Go 8-Bit, it's completely obvious why it did so well, because you looked at the lineup on the board on the day. There were 10 really incredible Edinburgh comedians all on the list.
Yeah.
It was video games, so if you liked it, you'd have a bang of that. It was £10 to see all of that. Mm-hmm. It was this one-off special thing.
It appeals to the guests because they're not having to do their material that they're doing constantly.
And it was a 50-seater.
You're not having to do a 5-minute version of your hour-long masterpiece that's about your relationship with your father. Mm. Do that in 5 minutes to drunk people.
Yeah.
So, no, it's not that.
There's lager and wine backstage, and at some point I'll say your name. If you can come on and play Street Fighter badly, that would be awesome.
And what were you going to be doing this evening?
Exactly. Exactly that. And so,
even as simple as that, have you got a console at your accommodation? No.
Well, we've play got on one.
What
do you want to play?
So that's perfect, and that just started to click right
immediately. So it sold out, and we added an extra show as well, which was great. So I think we scheduled 4 and we did a 5th, and the 5th one was lovely because it was actually like the best of the 4 shows. So we got everybody back to have like grudge matches and things like that.
A winner stays on.
Yeah, exactly that. And then sort of my career has involved very few people who have just sort of come around in cycles at various points. So Brendan Burns' show, which I was in 2007, the two guys who directed that were guys called Matt Holt and Rohan Acharya. Mm-hmm. Matt Holt went on to become the director of all of our sketch shows.
Right.
And Rohan, at the point Go Ape happened, Rohan's a massive gamer. He had a development production role, a production company. And so he came and saw Go Ape Bit. Up in Edinburgh, and immediately said, I want to take this on and develop it.
Yeah.
So, you know, from doing the first preview in London on, I think it was the 2nd of July, 2 months later, we'd got a development deal to develop the show for telly.
That's amazing.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
So it didn't exist as just a piss up for fun for any time at all. It immediately became work. Again, we immediately spoiled it.
Yeah. The beautiful conflict, though, because I had that after the first year of the podcast, because after 8-9 years of touring hard and working hard on my music and getting better, me turning up with a microphone and talking to people and not editing it had a bigger audience than I'd ever. I'd had something like 4 million downloads in the first year, and it's like I've not had 4 million downloads of my music and things like that.
It's
like,
bit. I mean, it was that beautiful writing scripts thing of, and crafting comedy. Then I just got pissed and played Mario Kart, and that was my job.
So it's that again. You never get to have that enjoyment because you're like, this is a success. For fuck's sake.
It's not even a thing.
So how was that, though? So it got a development deal, and then was that the production company then pitched it around, or were Dave involved early on?
They floated around. I think Ian Coyle, who's one of the commissioners at UKTV, I think he'd seen the first one in 2013. I think he was at Comedy Central then.
Yeah.
And he'd liked it, but it was like, I mean, it was... You never saw one of the early live ones, did you?
No, I didn't.
It was fucking carnage.
Yeah.
So it was, the way it worked then, me and some of the team captains, and we sort of hosted it, but if they came on our team, if we didn't play, me and Sam, the guests played for on our behalf.
Right.
But if they lost, we had to do forfeits.
Right.
So me and Sam had to do something fucking up because it was quite boisterous. So that was things like 3 shots of Tesco Everyday Value vodka.
Amazing.
Or eat a bowl of jalapenos.
Yeah.
Which at the very first one, a catchphrase was coined by an audience member of drink the brine. So it was dead arms. Yeah. So getting just punched by the winning team. Like, it was very laddie and visceral.
It was very the reality of playing games with your mates.
Indeed.
It was structuring that and going, you get a dead arm, you get this, you get that.
I can't remember what you asked me, but
Go on. So where was the development on to Dave, and where did it?
So Ian Coyle saw that.
Yeah,
was like, I mean, it's obviously amazing, but I don't know what the fuck to do with that on telly.
Yeah, because
it's just chaos.
Work?
It was this tiny, sweaty room with mess everywhere.
Yeah,
and so nothing happened. But Rohan picked it up, and we started running it as a monthly night in London to develop the show up. And Ro basically spent a year and a half trying to get anyone from telly to come to watch it. Mm. And the received wisdom, I mean, it's hilarious now, like Beckett's just got this video gaming thing coming up, and Chris Ramsey did gaming in his show. And so now everybody's trying to make a fucking video gaming TV show.
Yeah.
But I did 18 shows
at
the fucking Wenlock and Essex, and no one came to see them because they'd all, as telly does, which is, again, is another thing about telly. The people in telly decided video games couldn't work on telly, so none of them gave it the time of day. So every month, Ro would beg everyone to come and watch it, and occasionally one of them might have the courtesy to reply to him and say, oh, yeah, we'll be along, and then not turn up. So at the time, there was me and Sam. There was Guy Kelly, who was amazing, who he did things like he could complete the first level of Sonic the Hedgehog 2 in under a minute, blindfolded, playing the game with his feet, and getting an extra life as well. Like, shit like that. He was incredible.
Amazing.
So he had this character. We had two guys.
And there's a beauty there because people are excited to watch them fail
insane.
As well. If they succeed, it's great. If they don't, there's
By
also
the way,
that,
it works because there's no get out. There's just, you haven't done that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Bye.
Yeah.
It was brutal. It was brutal, but euphoric when he did it.
Yeah.
Then we had Paul Foxcroft and Richard Soames. They did commentary, and Will Hartley was the punishment twat, was his official title, so he conjured up the punishments.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's a team of 6 people, Ro directing it, and our technical guys, Rob Sedgbeer, who I now work with on Wi-Fi Wars and other things.
Yeah.
He was sort of running the technical side of it. So that's 8 people spending a month writing a new 2-hour-long show every month to show to fucking no one because they didn't have the courtesy to turn up. I mean, there was no money in it.
Yeah.
That was, we could maybe sell 100 tickets for that, which spread 8 ways is no pounds.
Yeah, that doesn't really work out. And on a show that has any kind of tech spec, again, it's not an open mic. It's not just you and a microphone and
the getting
a spotlight.
Starts at 1 o'clock.
You've got to have screens.
Shows,
you've got to have everything set up and good to go. So, it's a weird one. But it's also, it's a weird one because I understand it as well. It's one of those things that until you've watched it, as I said at the start with Twitch, I can see
why you go, oh, why am I going to pay to go and watch people play games? Yeah. So it's understandable. It's annoying, but it's also like, yeah, I get that
confusion. I totally get why they would have thought
that. But once you've done it, again, it's the same with a comedian's watching wrestling and things like that. It's like, why would I go and see that? But the beauty as an audience member is the pressure is off as an audience member as well, because it's not some show that's been crafted that you have to appreciate every nuance and this and that, and the pressure is on as an audience member to enjoy it, to get this, to get that. If it's not funny, the awkwardness.
Yeah.
You're watching games.
Yeah.
That's all you're there to do. It's simple. So it's a really nice experience to just go and be part of and not feel any pressure.
Which
of
also
engagement.
Again, coming because it sort of all loops in my brain. It's like this big scribbly mess. It's that same thing of you were saying about the music of we spent 18 months chasing what we thought telly might like that thing to become. Mm-hmm. And somewhere along the way in that, whilst we did get going a bit away and that's been very successful and that's awesome, we lost that heart of friends being silly together and entertaining people who wanted that.
Yeah.
And I think what's happened is there's going to happen. And I've gone off and done the streaming stuff with Twitch, but also new live shows like Wi-Fi Wars and the Video Game Show, these other things I'm doing. And actually what's happened is it's come full circle to going, just think of the ideal show you would love to be involved in or watch or do, make that and be satisfied that the people who enjoy it, enjoy it. And
100%.
And everybody who comes to that other stuff I do or engage with the stuff, I think, like Go 8-Bit DLC, which you were on.
Yeah.
Gamers like that show more because DLC was made for £4 and they stuck us in a cupboard.
Yeah.
And Roe, the producer, who produced the main show, produced that and was allowed to do whatever he wanted. So we went, for £4, what is the best show we can make as comedians that like video games?
Yeah.
And a lot of people, a lot of gamers, like DLC more than the main show.
Yeah.
Because we were allowed to make a show for us on that, whereas Go 8-Bit, you know, because Go 8-Bit costs a fortune to make, it's trying to do a different thing. That has to become broader and more inclusive.
Yeah.
But you're... The compromise with success in television is to dilute the idea because commercial television exists to fill the gaps between adverts.
Completely.
So I guess the main thing I've learned is that there just is a fundamental, unless you're very, very lucky, and I can't even think of an example, unless you're very, very lucky, you have to make a distinction if you try to be a success in television or anything like that, that there is either make a commercial proposition and dilute it to be fit for purpose or follow your heart, follow your dreams, but you're not going to monetize that like the other thing, because of course you can't.
There's two things that come to mind there. Number one, I love Go 8-Bit, but I am also a gamer who will enjoy DLC just as much, and I knew that because one of my favourite parts of Go 8-Bit from the first episode was Ellie, because she gets to do the Games Master type role of, for a brief moment, here's a bit of history of a game. And that's fascinating to me. Yeah. Watching people compete is fun, but again, there's a limit on that. It's one where I could kind of feel, oh, if I've missed a week, it doesn't matter.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? I'll come in next week, it's fine, it's not. But the bits that are, here's this little bit of information of this game you've never heard of, or this new independent game, here's how it was developed. They gave me what I loved about Games Master back in the day.
It's actual stuff, it's substance.
And again, you joke about it on DLC, but Games Master... the memory of it is, oh, you got cheats and stuff like that.
That
wasn't the best thing about it. The best thing was the little bits of information, the little bits of background news you wouldn't have known about things coming through and stuff like that. And that's what Ellie got to do on that. And that's what DLC essentially was.
Yeah.
Well, overall, it took away the competitive gaming element and brought in a just, let's talk about games, let's nerd out about games, let's compare games.
Yeah, and also allowed me, Ellie and Sam to breathe within that because I think that, The TV show, to a large extent, was the sort of head of it all is Dara O'Brien being amazing at hosting a show.
Completely.
And each week, he's the best. Of course, he absolutely is the right person for that job. And then we've got two famous people who are definitely more famous than me, Sam and Ellie combined.
100%, yeah.
So that show, once Ellie's explained what the game is and once we've played games, there's not much time left for me, Ellie or Sam to do much if we're going to actually meet these two proper famous people that are the reason 400,000 people have watched the bloody thing.
Completely.
So DLC allowed us to go, here's us, here's what we're about.
Exactly that. Because with the greatest respect, the first episodes I watched, I thought, well, these two guys are clearly the creators of it.
Yeah.
Because that's why they're here. Because they would go, well, who do you want to host it? Rob Beckett. They'd pick two
names. And
that
could easily have happened.
Well, they're obviously the creators, and that's what I said. But that is what gave it its heart and what gave it the the competition between you and Sam,
the
confusion that you one would assume that you two were the experts, and Sam regularly had no idea what a controller was.
Yeah, Sam had a lot of things early like where people were like, why is this picking up? And actually, the sadness
which I thought was great. That's the beauty of
it. That was great. Like, but one of the other things that happened was that one of the things we wanted to do, when we did the show live, we did 50 shows live, and we kept track of the score across all the shows we did live.
Wow.
It ended up, beautifully, it was 25 all after the 50th show.
Yeah.
Russell Howard, who was one of the guests, insisted we do one more game of Pong to decide who won. So I ended up winning 26-25.
Amazing.
It was lovely because the narrative of the whole thing was we spent 3 years doing 50 shows and the outcome was a draw. So there was absolutely no value in what we'd done, which is lovely.
But I love that because that is something that when I had Alex Horn on to talk about Taskmaster, he discussed that one of the hardest things he had was convincing the network or the producers or whoever that people would be interested in a running score.
Same people every week.
Thought was has to be different people every week. Has to be this. He was like, no. It honestly,
let it progress.
If it's the same people, then a series. You've got that running score, and you've got that again. It's clever because you've got that investment of I don't want to miss a week.
Yeah.
If it is 8 out of 10 cats, which I adore.
Yeah.
I don't know which ones I've seen and which ones I haven't.
And it doesn't
because there's such a variation of people who are regularly on.
If I
see one that is on my auto-record thing, I'll look at it and be like, I have to watch at least 10 minutes before I know if I've already seen this because it's not got that. Whereas on a show like Taskmaster where it's
we all know exactly where we are.
And again, I guess it works on Go 8-bit weirdly because of the games more than because of the guests because the games are never really repeated.
Now the games are the stars of the show.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what's interesting there is that there's a podcast I really like on my network. I helped them set it up called Hardcore Listing, and they came up with the idea. And what I loved about it was because it's just top fives. I kind of said to them, I was like, "You've had a genius stroke there because if you've got a week where someone isn't a fan of the guest, they might be a fan of the topic. And vice versa. They might be a fan of the guest and not know the topic. It's like, that's brilliant because you've got a double attack
there. You've got two ways to come in.
And it's the same on Go 8-Bit. It's like, if I look and go, oh, I'm not into these, but it lists and they're going to be playing Mario Kart or this or that, you go, love that.
I love Mario Kart. So I like some of that. Yeah. So we double dip. But yeah, that was one of the weird things about when we got Go 8-Bit away with Dave was that given Taskmaster existed and they bought into that, it was a shame we didn't get to do a across the series keep track because actually, like you say, people who tune in week one were probably gone, who are those guys?
Yeah.
And what ended up being the first record we did ended up going out as the fifth one. And a lot of people tweeted us when the fifth one was running, oh, this must have been the first one. Because in that, me and Sam did establish who we were and what we were about because it was the first one we filmed.
Yeah.
And if that had gone out first, that would have helped us go, oh, right, they're the captains and this is the rubber and this is the relationship. But because for whatever reason, someone wasn't brave enough to just go, well, you know what? Even if the first show isn't the best one, we can still put that out first because we have enough faith in the thing.
Yeah.
I think if we'd have been able to build that narrative arc over the series, that would have helped cement my... Because me and Sam still aren't that prominent in the final edit of the show for all sorts of reasons. But if we'd have had that narrative arc over a series, we would have been the constant through that, which would have allowed us to be a more fundamental part of the fabric of the show.
Yeah,
and by shooting out a sequence, it matters less. There is less sense of a narrative stakes for us.
Right, of course. So because there isn't that. Here's where we are. Here's,
Whereas actually, because in series three, the first two episodes, me and Sam don't talk in part one, which is insane for a panel show that the captains don't talk. But if you were cut, if there was a narrative arc, you'd be coming back and immediately you'd be going, so, all right, it's week four. Steve's already 3-0 up for the series. So, Sam, you guys are going to have to do something special. And it would be to the benefit of the show. I'm selfishly, it would help me and Sam.
Yeah.
But it would put stakes on it. Before we've even started, you go, right, Vernon Kay, you've got to be good today.
I need you to win this.
Because if you don't win this game that you've said you're good at, we're knackered. So with our guests, but also with each other, there'd be a richness to that.
Yeah,
competitive spirit, which was always so important at the live shows. It is a shame that got lost because I think it would have given it if they'd have trusted that people wouldn't hate us. if they'd have lent into that a bit more, I think the show would be richer for it.
I think
you would want to come back and see that rivalry.
I think the key.
I'll shut the window because
it's fine. It's a bit atmospheric noise. I like it. All it's right, exciting. Right. The key. For me as a viewer, though, is that all of those things you've mentioned that could have been different essentially all play into making the game's the star of the show.
Sure.
And that works nicely. Because, I think that is a wonderful thing because it means that it is. It's a nostalgia thing. It's it's a great platform for independent games. And there's numerous games on there that I'd never heard of that I need to play or have played since and because of that and that kind of thing. Because,
And
that's important.
And as a gamer, it's been lovely to see that work because, like, Human Fall Flat, a game we had on, I think, Series 2, they made sure that game launched on the PlayStation Network the week the show was out.
Right.
So the sales went up. Chicken Jump, which is this little, tiny little indie game on smartphone that they let us use a version of, they've now put DLC characters of us in it, which is
amazing.
So I can play a game with me in it, which is wicked.
What's the one with the swords?
Oh, Nidhogg.
Nidhogg. Because that, again, I've only ever watched it on that and on DLC and on news things. It's, every time I watch it, I'm like, this is, I've never got around to playing it, but it's just
so
engaging to watch as well. Yeah, like the pressure is really, it's that simplicity of, it's why the fake horses at the arcades is exciting still. Because it's stupid, it's pointless, but it's like, who's going to win?
It's pulling back. Yeah, it's beautiful, beautiful game.
I love that. So was that a key part on your outlook of it that, or number one, an awareness that you can't have longevity as the focus is just going to be, remember Mario Kart?
Yeah.
And remember this? Yeah. And remember that? It's like, that will be exciting for a moment, but then you'll run out, and then you'll be like, remember Echo the Dolphin?
That wasn't very good, was it?
Sorry for reminding you of that kind of... It's that kind of thing. So the balance was always great for me of getting that nostalgia hit of, man, I'd forgotten about that game.
Yeah.
And having the excitement of, what the hell is this? And again, I think it's timed perfectly because it was at the dawn of iPhone or smartphone and tablet games well.
Yeah.
So it is that kind of, you could watch the show and then be playing it on the train to work in the morning rather than watch the show and think, oh, I'll get that on my Xbox at some point.
Yeah.
A lot of them you could kind of go instantly into.
Yeah, and there's various reasons for that. It was always a big thing because when we did the live show, it was far more retro, hence 8-bit being the original title. It was a lot more retro-focused. But when it was the TV show, I think we felt a responsibility. I don't even know who we is because there's lots of people. But I think me and Ro, certainly. I'm sure Ellie did as well, but me and Ro were sort of the engine room of that sort of early development stuff. Not to dismiss Sam and the hundreds I'd be working on it, but me and Ro put a lot of work into that early development of that show. And I think we did feel that responsibility that if we actually are able to make the first TV show on the scale of something like Games Master, about games in 15 years, we've got to try to represent everything that gaming is. So, yes, there is retro, and that's wonderful, and that's round one. But there's also indie games, and that's round four, because we want to shine a light on people games that are amazing that no one will ever know exist unless we point at them.
Yeah.
And then round two and round three, where the guests pick, the idea was hopefully they're either, if they're a more casual game, going to pick some sort of smartphone game, or they're going to go proper AAA modern game.
Yeah.
And so those first four rounds give us the ability to represent most of the different flavours of gaming.
That's great.
And it's funny because, some gamers sort of get frustrated that it's not just retro because it's called 8-bit, which is obviously, it's just a pun of go ape shit, is all it ever was.
Yeah.
It was always just a gaming pun. But I think some people feel like smartphone games aren't proper games, and they fucking are.
Because they really
they're games.
Are.
Of course they're games. They might not be the games you like, but it's a broad church, and we wanted to try to... Because I think the thing we had at Go 8-Bit was people's perception of it outside of it was, oh, it's just for sweaty, fat boys who are alone in rooms. And actually, we usually had more women than men coming to the Go 8-Bit live show.
Yeah.
It was a really cool, trendy set because we were doing it in Islington, so it was a very groovy crowd.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually, everyone had a game that they loved when they were kids. And most people, when they grew up, just forgot they enjoyed it and drifted away from it.
Yeah.
And yet they would be the same people who'd say, I'm not a gamer. Oh, but I play Candy Crush. Or this. And that's valid. And so there's this weird thing of not being a gamer, but you are. We're all gamers. We all like playing.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I'd say even people who felt themselves to be gamers when they were younger, a lot of them will have put more hours in on smartphone games than they ever put on as kids. Because you would.
Yeah.
You can only play it for a few hours, or you can do this or do that, or you're at school or whatever
else. You're on the tube and you've got fuck all, so you play Candy Crush.
And an example of that, when we did our end of year, our drunk cast, as a cognitive test, we played Fruit Ninja, which again, I'd seen on Go 8-Bit. And Susie Gage is a doctor, and she was like, it's a good test because not only is it reaction, it's resistance, because there are bombs that you can't swipe. So it was a test. As we got drunk, she'd test us every hour.
Yeah, how useful are you? Amazing.
And I used it for that, but because I had it on my phone, a Jim Smallman,
yeah, comedian, yeah, I know Jim. Oh, yeah.
Also he did his score on mine.
Nice.
And he got the high score. The next month, every train journey,
I was trying to beat this high score.
And it was I don't know if it was the first time we played it or not, but it was far better than I did. And it took me ages. Amazing. And I genuinely remember, this is too much information, but I remember the joy as I was sat on my toilet at home, yeah, and I beat his high score. In reality, I've hardly played it since,
yeah,
but I had to beat the high score. It. I was like, no, he did that, yeah, and I need to beat, it was on my phone. The high score on my phone needs to be my high score. And that was, for that week or month or whatever, that was easily the game I played the most, because I don't have a lot of time at home to play games often. Right, we're going to continue on the 8-bit journey, but I'm going to take a break in the middle of it to ask about what games you're into at the moment. Because I've recently, I had a few people tweet me about it. And again, as I've said to you, like when I did DLC, I don't get to do so much gaming. I try not to play games that have got long stories, because I like to be able to pick up and just jump in. And someone recommended PlayerUnknown Battleground.
Yeah.
And it blew me away. I put hours and hours into it. The best I've got down is to number 2. I've still never won one, but I got down to number 2, and I was on my own, and the joy, and I took a little screenshot of it. I took a picture of it.
Of course you did.
I love that game.
Yeah.
And for anyone who's not played it, it's still a beta, but it's such a simple concept. It's an online game, and when there are 100 people logged on, you'll get dropped onto an island,
yeah,
and you've got nothing.
It's the Hunger Games.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You have to get weapons, you have to get cars, and you have to survive.
Yeah.
So what games have you been enjoying in recent? It's tough, obviously, when you've got a family. But
yeah, it is. I mean, especially now with the TV show on. So at the moment, because we're in the middle of a TV show, I'm streaming 6 days a week, and I put a new video on YouTube every single day. And for these 10 weeks while the TV show's on, I'm deliberately mostly playing games that are on the TV show to sort of tie in,
perfect,
sort of bring an audience over to the online stuff.
Yeah.
So that all of the hours I have free around gigs and other commitments are mostly creating video gaming stuff for people to watch.
And that's interesting, because Twitch, for people who don't know, is somewhere where you can watch people playing online, and there would normally be the screen and then you in a little box somewhere.
It's insane. I mean, it is literally, I don't have to go anywhere. I sit in my house, I point a webcam and a mic at me, and I press a button on my computer, and it then broadcasts that to anybody who wants to watch it. And if they like watching me play games on that, they can choose to subscribe, which it's always free when it's broadcast, but if they choose to subscribe, that means they are saying, we like what you're doing and you want you to keep doing it. Yeah. Here is some money every single month. And they can subscribe at $4.99, $9.99 or $24.99. I've got a couple of people who, God bless them, have created a second account. So they give me $50 a month to allow me to indulge my habit, which I'm incredibly grateful for. But because people will go, why would anyone do that? And that is a perfectly valid question. The way I think of it is as an old person doing it, because I've covered it, it's mostly very young people doing it, because who else could afford to waste the time?
Yeah.
But I'm doing a radio talk show or a radio show, but instead of playing music, I'm playing video games in the background. And actually it's talk radio, it's community, because there's a chat window. They can all write messages to me and talk to me, and I can reply in real time. And actually it's a conversation. So it is talk radio, having it on in the background. Yeah. People have it on while they're at work and it's company, and there's a little community around it, but it's really about community and engagement rather than it is about the
Dan Lassac, who I used to work with. He's a Twitcher now, and he streams, and he's partnered, and he's been doing it for ages. And I did a tweet about this the other day, and not to get too heavy and philosophical, but I did a tweet to kind of discuss the fact that people from outside of it will look at that and go, God, that's not a real job.
No.
And when I had Rutger Bregman on recently, who's a historian and philosopher and economist, essentially, he discussed the fact that we've built this really weird society where work in our minds has to be something you don't want to do or you don't enjoy.
You make your
living, and it's a means to an end.
Yeah, it should hurt.
That's not how society should be. No. We could build a beautiful society where, not that jobs are easy, but the reward of being a nurse should be matched by, or the importance of being a nurse should be matched by the pay of being a nurse.
Yeah.
There's a reward there, so you enjoy it, but it's work.
Yeah.
And similarly, the tweet I did was saying how much, although I'm not a Twitcher, I love that Twitch exists, because that's going, here's something that I can make a living out of, that I can enjoy, but I work hard at. But because, again, from talking to Dan, he'll often be excited to have a night off to play the games he wants to play because he's got certain things that he's built up on his channel that people...
They're coming back for that. Yeah, I do Minecraft every week with somebody, and so I have to play Minecraft.
And it's not necessarily that you want to play it, but that's your job, and that's
what we do on Fridays together.
So anyone turning their nose up at that, just you've got the idea of how society should run wrong. Just because you hate your job, maybe that's a problem with your job rather than a problem with other people's jobs.
It's that thing of there's this thing at the moment that seems to be popping up. It's an old phrase, but it seems to be popping up everywhere at the moment. It's the price of everything and the value of nothing is this phrase that I keep seeing everywhere. And I think if your instinct when you hear about what Twitch is to react negatively towards it, just... For those people who are enjoying the thing that I'm doing, I'm giving up my time where I could be making money actually doing other things.
Yeah.
Instead of doing that, what I'd like to do is spend time having a chat with other people who enjoy the work that I do and want to hang out in a community of like-minded people. And to them, a quid a week allows them access to a community that exists for 10 hours a week online, but also there's a Go 8-Bit fan group, there's like a Discord group, which is like a chat community, which we're in every day, and building this little family of people, and it's company and it's entertainment, and it's a really nice thing. And I think it's very easy to sneer at it and say it's a negative thing, but actually all it is people who have a shared interest enjoying that together. And that's a beautiful thing.
And they see a value in it, and that's perfectly fair. Yeah. I always argue, like, I'm a big fan of mixed martial arts, and it's the reason I've got BT Sports, and I pay for Fight Pass. And people often say, oh, where can I stream it for free? It's like, I don't know, because see value in that. I see value. The fact is, what is BT Sports? It's something like a 15 quid a month or something like that. I get more hours of joy from mixed martial arts than... for £15 a month than I would get a £15 a month in a pub.
Yeah.
Or whatever, that'd be barely a one night in the pub that I'm getting there. Yeah. Whereas with me, I get at least two or three weekends a month and things like that. It's like, I see value in that. And it's the same with, if someone's throwing in a quid and they're tuning in even a couple of times a week.
Yeah.
That's really good value. I know it seems silly, but it's really good value.
Having a nice time, it costs more to get to the cinema. You might think Twitch sounds shit, but you might waste 50 quid on a Friday night on beer that you're going to piss out the next morning.
But it's our weird mindsets, and this comes into the kind of mobile gaming as well, of where we put our value, because it's completely true. I've done it. I'll hear about an app and be like, oh, this is exciting, and then I'll go to it and like, 79p,
fuck off, mate.
You'd lose a quid and not think about it, or if you went somewhere and the normal sandwich you buy is a quid more in this shop. You'd be like, oh, that's annoying, but you'd buy it and it's done. But you look on the app and go, I'm used to it being free. Therefore,
you talk about the BT Sports thing, and there is this weird thing where over the last 30, 40 years, because everything is commercialised now, and before there would have been a time where, the football, if it was on terrestrial telly, you could watch it for free, and now you've got to pay quite a lot of money if you want to watch it. But I think because... It sounds like, and also I'm very conscious of not sounding wrong, because I'm on the telly and I'm doing all right, and I don't want to sound like a prick who's just in a luxurious position, but there's this weird sense of entitlement that we just expect that we can have things. I think there's sort of this download culture where, like, music's great. Music doesn't make a fraction of what it did now in terms of recording music. You have to go to the live gig to do it. But there is this thing of, oh, well, why should I have to pay for anything? I should just be able to get it if I want it, and it's not doing any harm. But it is, because there's people working really hard.
Yeah, I completely agree.
I mean, yes, salaries in football are inflated. It doesn't need to be as expensive as it is, but they're inflated because people value it.
I was going to say, I even argue on that when people say, oh, he's not worth 100 million. It's like,
well, he objectively fucking is, because they paid him.
He is, because they've paid him. Yeah, they're not throwing the money at him for fun. It's because he will bring shirt sales in, and people will turn up at the ground each week and things like that. It's like, the issue isn't...
You might hate that that's the way that the market economy works.
And that's fine,
that's valid. It's valid to say this shouldn't be like this. It's dreadful that football players get paid that much and nurses get paid dog shit. No one would feel that wasn't the case.
Yeah.
But it's not the way anything works. There are things that are in more demand, and they accumulate wealth.
Completely, I completely agree there. And
I make $400 a month on Twitch, so I'm not retiring off the fucking thing. Yeah. So it's all relative.
But again, it is. I completely agree. There's this weird thing, and it's something that I've become more and more obsessed with. In fact, 3 years ago now, I had Stuart Lee on the podcast, who's amazing. I love Stuart, but he talked about I think it was in Mexico, this clowning thing that you couldn't take phones in or anything. And there was such a beauty in the fact it just existed then.
Yes.
And I had similar with when me and Dan Lasaka declared that we're doing our last year of touring together, we did our Glastonbury set, and we had a lot of people saying, oh, where can I watch that? And it's like,
no.
In the tent.
Yeah.
That's where you can watch it. There's certain things that we do have this weird thing that of entitlement now, of I deserve everything. It's like, no, when I grew up, I couldn't have certain albums because I couldn't afford them. I couldn't go to certain places because I couldn't afford to. And when I could, I did. And the example I gave when talking to the Hardcore Listening Boys have started a Patreon.
Right,
and they were concerned that some people might, because they're still putting out at least a one podcast a week, sometimes more, which is more than they ever did, but they're doing a bonus one sometimes behind the Patreon wall.
Yeah.
And they were concerned that some people might feel, oh, we're missing out. And my argument was, well, it's fine for them to miss out because you can't always have everything. The fact is, when I was, and the exact, this isn't a woe is me thing, but this is the example I gave to Chris when we were discussing it. When I was touring America and the UK and Japan and had an album in the top 40 and a single in the top 40, I lived at home with my mum.
Yeah.
Because that's what I could afford. Yeah. I couldn't afford the life of a pop star or whatever else because the money hadn't come in yet. There's not as much money as people think. So I couldn't have that. And then when I could afford a flat, I got a flat.
Yeah.
And that was just something I had to wait for. There wasn't this entitlement of, well, I'm touring the world. I deserve to have this, 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 and this. It's like, no, you deserve exactly what you can get. And it's not the end of the world as well if you're missing out on certain things.
It's not a thing that actually matters. If you've got food in the fucking roof, you're doing all right.
Yeah.
But on that very note, you're talking about the guys offering the extra thing for the thing. At the moment, my situation is, if Go 8-Bit doesn't get a fourth series off the back of this third series, I've got to get a day job in April. I make money from touring and I make a bit from this and that.
Yeah.
But I need a regular income. I've got a kid. I've got a house. I've got things to do. So in April, I'll just have to get a job because I've got to pay for things.
Yeah.
So I'm not, although I've had a successful TV show and although I'm doing all these other things and my job is unarguably indulgent because I'm a prick that plays computer games, but I haven't been able to monetize it to the point where it is a valid income for an adult approaching 40 who needs to pay for his family and support his family.
No, I get that.
So on Twitch, the similar sort of thing happened where initially I felt really funny about the idea when I got affiliate status of people giving me money. But actually it is people demonstrating, I value what you do. I want you to continue doing it. Here is a thing. But when I...
And people have got the choice to not as well.
You don't have to.
That's kind of the key bit. That's the bit that blows my mind is when people get angry about it. It's like, that's fine.
Yeah.
Don't then. No. If you don't think it's worth it, people are like, it's not worth paying. It's like,
Don't then, that's fine.
I'm not going to be angry. I'm still going to engage with you.
You can still watch it live for free.
Yeah, exactly.
You're still valued.
Yeah.
But so when they started to give me money, I went, well, look, if you're actually giving me money, you should get something for that. So I now do several things where if they subscribe at $24.99, which is insane, I do a stream once a month where I actually play the games with them. So we're directly playing together, and that's lovely. Yeah, yeah. For anybody who's a subscriber, once a month they get an email from me, which is two of my YouTube videos a week and a half early.
Yep.
And once a month they get a video no one has ever seen and no one ever is private. So I sent out last month to subscribers a video of the first ever game battle at the first ever live Go 8-Bit show.
Oh, wow.
I've got a really shitty video of it.
Yeah.
And I thought, if you subscribe to me and you like Go 8-Bit and you know what I'm about, I'll give you that. And at the time, on the community forum, a few people expressed their frustration that there was sort of becoming this sort of two-tier hierarchy thing within it.
Right.
But my position was, yeah, but I'm giving up 15 hours a week doing it. I've got no fucking money.
Yeah.
So if you'll give me money, I'll rub your tummy because I have to make this work. If you're upset you can't have the 5-minute long video once a month, the alternative is I don't do the 10 hours a week I'm doing because I can't fucking afford to do it.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's weird at that level to not understand. I don't just exist to amuse you. It's got to pay money.
Exactly. And that was the bit of advice I gave the Hardcore Listening guys when I was starting a Patreon because it's not for me. I've looked at it the way my things work. I've got the balance I like.
Yeah, yeah.
But that doesn't mean I'm against anything. And the thing I said to those guys was, look, if you do it, it has to be additional content. It can't be, you've had it for free for a year. Now, all the support you've given us to get to this level, fuck you.
Yeah.
But if you can go, that support's great. Here's some more stuff. If I've got money, I've got time to do more stuff. And that's exactly the same. It's going, here's, I'm not taking anything away from you.
No. But the alternative is if I don't get paid, I can't fucking do it, mate.
Exactly.
I've got to feed my kids. That.
But well, so, I mean, it's a good point to mention now that the beauty in the digital age is that you can go back and watch all of Go 8-Bit on the Dave online.
Yeah.
But I can't think of what the,
it's UK not, TV Play.
That's it. On the UK TV Play. And that's great because, again, I think it is the kind of show that on a Sunday or whatever else, you can watch.
It's a good binge watching your pants.
Almost unacceptable amount of episodes because it's just computer games and it's just enjoyable and interaction and jokes and messing about. It's not, oh, there's this big story arc or narrative or this, that. It's like, just...
You will not be required to think once.
Get through. So there is that. And again, hopefully a full series.
Yeah.
What else is going on? What is Wi-Fi Wars and the other ones that you've started to do outside of Guy? But in fact, firstly, just it's coming to mind now. Is there a plan to do any live Go 8 bits, or is that owned now or married to Dave?
There may be. It's not Dave. In terms of where I'm at now, one thing I'm doing now is trying to build this online audience, and really the YouTube videos I'm really making just to advertise the fact I'm doing online stuff and bringing them over to Twitch.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to build up a point where I've actually got Twitch to the point now where if I do 6 hours a week after the series finishes, I get paid minimum wage to do Twitch. Yeah, I sort of go, that's a base to build from. That's nice.
Yeah,
what I'm trying to do is get to a point where it's a proper money for doing it regularly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that's fine. I'm getting paid and it's a proper job.
Yeah.
But that exists as a thing to do around everything.
To highlight that it's a proper job, from talking to Daniel Zach, because he's got a certain amount of his fan base who are in America, he does certain days of the week where he's on American time. He'll play through the night and things like that, because he's like, well, that's where the audience is. So it's not as simple as, oh, you're just sitting around playing games. It's like, no, it's scheduled. It's planned.
If you're going to build an audience on Twitch, you've got, these are the times I do it, and you have to be there regularly. Yeah. Because if 1 week you're not there, they'll go and find someone else.
And fill that gap.
So that's what's going on the side. But then you're asking about live and what else I do. And the main thing that I do outside of Go 8-Bit is live shows. And there is... there's Wi-Fi Wars, the video game show, a sketch night with Sam Pamphilon, a comedy night, and a new thing we're doing called Pub Quiz. And I can explain all those in a bit more. But basically, all of those shows are a reaction to my experience of spending 3 years working towards Go 8-Bit as a TV show and trying to get back to what I actually enjoyed doing and how I enjoyed having fun. So Go 8-Bit, Series 1, the money was so bad.
Yeah.
And in Series 2... In a partial exchange to be remunerated more adequately for our effort and investment in time in that show, myself and Sam gave away the live rights to Go 8-Bit in exchange for more money to pay for heating. And that's something I'm entirely comfortable with. I'm very happy with that because I needed the money.
Yeah.
But so Go 8-Bit now, both as an IP and as a live proposition, no longer has anything to do with me, which is weird. I had to give up my baby. In order to get the TV show, which was a worthwhile exchange.
I was going to say, it's the Dragon's Den moment.
Yeah, they wanted 100%.
Yeah, we're going to give you, but what I add makes it far more, and you get your dream gets. Because again, it is worth remembering that this is you've got a proper show on TV and that.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and depending on who you ask, it might be as good as Games Master. Yeah. And as someone who liked Games Master, that's like, some people fucking hate it.
That's fine too. Yeah.
But so that's there. But that now exists really as a platform that is a TV advert for everything else I do. And that's the relationship I have with it. That show exists and is what it is.
Yeah.
But it's the best chance I've got of going, oh, look, I'm Steve. I'm funny and play games. Come and give me money at things.
But that's what's clever as well, because the beauty of a show like that is in the format. That's what you've come up with got.
Yeah.
So it's not a case of anything else you put your passions into is going to have a negative effect on that, because you've come up with it. You're now at the point where you can just turn up and do the job.
Yeah. Oh,
you know what I mean? It's not one where it's like, oh, I fuck that off. That just pays the bills or whatever. It's like, no, you've perfected that. Now you can go, here's the other things I want to do. Here's the things I want to craft.
Yeah. And
point towards it.
Yeah. And the main first one of those was this show Wi-Fi Wars. And the beautiful thing about with the journey of Go 8-Bit, the beautiful thing is very, very early on, just after we signed the development deal for Go 8-Bit for television, a lovely man called Rob Sedgbeer, who actually was the boyfriend of a fan of me and Sam's when we did sketch comedy.
Amazing.
Came up to it. Yeah. It's so serendipitous, all of these things. And Rob came up and said, I've invented this thing that you might be interested in using in your live show. And what he'd got at the time was he'd got a version of Pong that he could put the game on the screen and beam controls to people's phones wirelessly. Right. It worked with about six people.
Yeah.
And but you didn't have to install anything. You just went to a web page and it did this sort of thing in the room. So he rigs a Wi-Fi network in the room.
Yeah.
And you were going on your phone, whatever smartphone you've got, connect to the Wi-Fi network, go to a web address we tell you, and then we do cool shit on your phone. But amazing. It started off six people playing Pong. And then over the course of that first year of development, it became Pong working with the entire audience, which was 180 people in Edinburgh. And also they would then vote on who they thought was going to win. So during the show, as a live show, the audience score points for guessing correctly who's going to win. Amazing. So they actually win the show by playing well. And that sort of got lost in the transition to TV. But that voting mechanic you see in the TV show is the Wi-Fi wars.
Yeah, yeah.
But what no one ever did was recognise the value of Rob Sedgby or his technology and buy him out. So me and Sam sold the format and go 8-bit.
Yeah.
But Rob Sedgby and his technology were never invested or acquired by anybody because they, the non-gaming people who were developing that television show didn't recognise the inherent value in that.
Yeah, yeah,
and so what that meant was when Go 8-Bit drifted away as a live proposition and I was left with what I wanted to do, myself and Rob had a chat and went, where could we go with this? And again, purely by luck, the day before we filmed the Go 8-Bit TV pilot, we did our regular residency at the Backyard Comedy Club then in London. And we were told to cancel it because we were doing the TV show, but we didn't want to because we got a loyal live audience that we wanted to do the show for. And we used to do a thing in the live show where we put a comedian on a virtual reality roller coaster in a headset and made them try to do their set whilst holding a tray of champagne glasses.
Great.
It's fucking stupid.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was really fun. And it just happened. Somebody from the Royal Institution Christmas Lectures was at that gig. So they then said to us, we're doing VR as part of the Christmas Lectures. Would you come and do that experiment on a kid as part of the thing? And we were like, fucking hell, the Christmas Lectures. Like, because for us, that's, you either know about the Christmas Lectures or are obsessed with it or you have no idea what it is.
Right.
But it's a big deal. Michael Faraday set it up in the 1820s. It's been going every year ever since.
Wow.
And so we got to be in the 2014 Christmas Lectures doing this silly little thing as part of that.
Yeah.
And then they said to us, is there anything else you'd like to do with us, because it was really cool, it was really fun. And we said, well, Rob's invented this thing that we use at the show where people log in and play games. We could do a talk about that. And they said, yeah, that'd be amazing. So and they immediately went, well, we'll put it in the summer program, which is like this prestigious run of like scientists and astronauts give talks. And they said, come and do that. And we went, yeah, cool, we'll do that. But at the time, all we had was Pong working with 150 people and a vote. So we just told them we could do it. And then Rob had to retrospectively invent a new technology that allowed us to do the talk. So the 2015, he managed to get it working where I think we had about 350 people in the room and we played, I think, five games over the hour, one of which we tried to do didn't work, but we got away with it and did it.
Yeah.
And then we sort of went, okay, well, what else can we do with this? So we'd got a show at that point. So we did it up in at Edinburgh as Wi-Fi Wars, sort of Go 8-Bit Presents Wi-Fi Wars. And that went on tour. And we're now at the point where initially it was all things like the votes. You got two buttons on your phone and went yes or no. So Pong was up or down.
Yeah.
But Rob then started to add more buttons, add more button presses. We do track and field, but everybody goes left, right, left, right, left, right, and runs.
Amazing.
And sort of accumulates everybody's running.
Oh,
but
wow.
Now Rob beams games into their phones. So we've got everything from like a version of Snake, the early phone game, to an actual 3D first-person shooter that's a multiplayer deathmatch. They all play against each other.
Oh,
like the networking skill of what he's done is incredible.
Yeah, that sounds insane.
We do virtual reality, a flight simulator. So if you've got a Google Cardboard, we can beam VR to your phone. You don't have to install anything.
That's amazing.
Oh, it's sick. And we've got about 4 hours worth of games now. We could do 4 hour long shows of it with all of this different stuff he's done. But the latest thing he's done, which is the thing that we're really excited about and which we're working towards, is Rob, because we've done three annual lectures at the RI now, we're doing our fourth this summer because we have a residency there. Our residency, our comedy
insane,
residency is in the library at the Royal Institution. It's in Mayfair. It's fucking insane. We're now at the point where Rob, for the July show last year in the summer programme, I said, could you make the audience compete against people watching online? But I asked him to do it the day before the lecture. And he did it. And so for our third lecture, we did three video games with the venue competing versus the world live. And I broadcast it on Periscope from my phone. So literally, I'm on my phone going, hello, everyone. Welcome. If you're watching this, I'm at the Royal Institution. There's all the people.
Yeah.
Go to this web address, log in, and you're going to play games against them. And we did it live. And what that's now become, again, the Royal Institution give us the Sunday room every week. So after Go 8-Bit each week, we do a live online version of Wi-Fi Wars. So we now let anyone from anywhere in the world watch a live broadcast where they all play games against each other and win points. And like we give them a game if they win the show. We're also like send them a Steam code for a game. But what it means is that we're now in a position where we can broadcast essentially a live television show where an audience can watch it live in an environment, but also we can broadcast it live globally just off of a computer, and everybody watching can directly interact with and affect the outcome of the show.
That's amazing.
So this July's show at the Royal Institution, the one thing we don't do when we stream is have multicam. Yep. So we're going to have, I think, three or four cameras in the venue. Mm-hmm. We're going to mic the audience so you get an ambient sound of them cheering. Things. But we are going to attempt, with me hosting and doing all the chutzpah stuff and Rob operating it, broadcast to broadcast standard a HD television show from a live environment where the entire planet can play along with it. Other than sorting out the cameras and the mixing, that's where he's got to. And if there's anything that the journey and the frustrations of the journey that Go 8-Bit was, that's beautiful, is recognizing in the boyfriend of a fan of mine the value of what they did and wanting to invest my time in nurturing that relationship and exploring it with him for no obvious financial gain or reason, because it's so niche. We are now in this position where our intention is, if we can get that working for July, which we should, we will then be in a position where if we can get a small studio place in London, if you've got an idea for a show, you can come into a space and immediately broadcast globally your idea for a show, immediately have an archive video of that, because we mix it as live through the sort of streaming software. And you can do any sort of format show you've got, you can do, have instant feedback from an audience.
Yeah.
So we're sort of working on this idea as a way to, sort of
that instant live interaction.
You don't need to have loads of money or have an executive spoil your idea make real your idea for what your thing could be. And that's the thing that's actually where me and Rob have come to, because Go 8-Bit was so much about losing control and having to give over your idea to a group of people to make it make sense on commercial and their terms. And actually, by just chasing this weird thing of playing games with people in a room, what it's actually brought me and Rob through to, partly as a reaction to the experience of Go 8-Bit, but also by just doing what we found interesting and exciting, we're now in a position to hopefully allow anybody else who goes on that journey that we've been on to not have to jump through those frustrating hoops that we did.
Completely.
So it's actually becoming less about us doing things directly and more about ways we can make that creative, that sort of ideas and creation thing allow you to have a purity of your idea that is impossible in television.
And I think that's ever more evident in podcasting, in Twitch, in all these other things. I've talked before about how I never like the term of, oh, this particular artist is underrated. No, because in general, by their fan base, they're hugely rated. And that's the important part, and being happy with that, rather than going, how do I appeal to the masses?
Yeah.
I mean, masses are fucking idiots, so you don't want to appeal to. But what podcasts and what Twitch and what everything that you were saying there is
it democratizes.
You can make it and then find the audience. Like, you can make the art is and then go, who is the audience? Rather than, and I think that's happening with TV more, with a lot of the Netflix and Amazon and stuff like that, is you create the piece of art and then you find out what the audience is. You don't go, we need to make something for 4 o'clock or for 9 p.m. on a Thursday and this audience, 18 to this. It's like, no, we've got something great. We're going to make it and find who the audience is.
Yeah, we'll work out who likes it. Yeah. But underrated is a great word to focus on, because me and Sam used to get underrated a lot when we were a double act, and me and Rob get that now that we're doing this sort of Y4 stuff, and it's still quite under the radar. Is all underrated is, anyone who says something is underrated, they're assuming a position of superiority because their perception of how valued or important or good your thing is, it's their opinion that fucking matters. Because underrated just means you think you're more important than the people that are enjoying it.
Yeah.
And so actually you're coming in and blessing it with your fucking aura
saying
it's valued and it isn't. Underrated just means you're arrogant if you're saying it. Completely. That's all underrated means.
I couldn't agree more. I could agree with it. And the key to enjoying what you do and all that kind of thing is to respect those that do rate it, to respect the audience who are like, oh my God, that sounds amazing. That's mind blowing. Well, that's perfect. We're over 70 minutes now. So I'll start to wrap things up. At the end, I'll get where people can keep up to date with you. But just one question that came to mind as you were talking about that, the beauty of 300 people in the room all playing a game together. Something me and my mate Chris discuss a lot, because I took him along to try out a load of VR stuff.
Right, we got
invited into, I think it was a Universal or somewhere, and they had a load of different ones for us to try out and play with. And I ended up getting the PlayStation VR, and I think it's amazing. And we discussed a lot how worried we were for the future of arcades. In general, arcades have died hugely, but I grew up in arcades. I loved arcades. Well, one of my greatest boasts as a kid was I was convinced me and my brother were the first British people to complete the Simpsons arcade game, because we were on holiday in America the day it came out,
and we
sat in an arcade and completed it, and it wasn't in the UK yet. And we were like, what are the chances anyone else has done this?
Yeah.
Exactly. So, but that worried us. And things that we discussed are things like what you were saying, essentially being an arcade, a crowd all playing together. But
I
know there's a couple of places in America now where it's essentially a warehouse, and say 30 people can go in, and it's a VR experience for 30 of you, and you're all moving around and you can engage in the VR.
Yeah.
Obviously, AR, augmented reality, is even more viable in that respect, because you've got that safety of you can see your surroundings.
Yep.
So what do you kind of think the future is? Is the future going completely introverted and sitting in your living room to engage through Twitch or for everything else? Or is there ways, like the shows that you're putting on, where it can be a communal experience and it can be going down the arcades with your mates?
Yeah, I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think everything became so... Really, things like Twitch and also things like Wi-Fi wars and those sort of things are a reaction to the homogenization of entertainment.
Yeah.
So everything became big platforms, and you know, we got to the point where we've got what's it fucking called? Simon Cowell's thing, X Factor.
Yeah.
X Factor.
The Voice or one of them.
Yeah, all that. Britain's
got a voice.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Yeah. So TV sort of is having this last hurrah of appointment of view television.
Yeah.
But actually, so much of that feels so similar and feels, because it's trying to be commercial, it's doing the same sort of job, that you do get this reaction against it, which is, it is podcasting and it is Twitch. It's all these things where, like you said, you create a thing and then the people that want it will find it and find that value. And it is these little niche pockets, and it's everything is richer and more nuanced. So you say, like, there isn't arcades. There's the Four Quarters in, is it Peckham, the Four Quarters?
Right.
There's the Heart of Gaming. Those guys have been running a few different places in London. There's things like the National Video Game Arcade up in Leicester.
A week or two ago, I went to my local arcades in Southend, which is where I went to school and used to play the Fist of the North Star arcade game and all sorts. And I was stunned because...
There are
modern new games. There's new games for new films. And I just assumed it had all stopped. And... Yeah. Admittedly, they were empty when I was in there, but they were still making them.
Japan is still a thing.
I was going to say, because what prompted me to do that was when I was in America last year, and I went in there's an arcade chain that's got, it's two people's names. It's not Frankie and Benny, that's the restaurant over here, but it's something like that. And that, I went in there and was like, oh, shit, there's a Guardians of the Galaxy arcade game, and there's this, and there's that.
Yeah,
and
admittedly,
most of them are finding a way for you to not be able to play at home, so there's either a gun you hold or a car you sit in or whatever else. But that excited me, because I thought they'd just gone. So it's nice to know that they haven't.
Yeah. Well, also it's about again, you know, the price of everything, the value of nothing thing.
Yeah.
It's about all of these things finding their place. There's Centre for Computing History in Cambridge, which I've done a couple of events at, sort of hosted some things, and that is this weird little place on an industrial estate outside Cambridge, and it's got, like, upstairs they've got this library of almost every game ever, and they've got most machines there, and they do talks and things, but it's a wonderful thing, and I love it with all my heart. It's a rundown piece of shit as a building,
and it will
never be glamorous,
yeah,
but it exists a lot on volunteers and on donations of games from people who are passionate about those things, and a small but loyal community of people who are interested in the sorts of events and talks and things that go on there. And actually, you could argue that the Computing History Museum in Cambridge, you could argue, is an example of how actually there isn't a market for that stuff and it's dead. But that's because you're coming at it as if you've got to be fucking Disney whenever you do anything. And 100%. You haven't. There are enough people give a fuck about that particular thing that place can exist by the generosity of the people who are passionate about it, and it can serve them in the way they need it.
And that it has value. It doesn't have to be appealing to the mainstream. It's what the BBC was built on, the fact that it should be creating... it's, it, you know, it can have those big commercial pop hits, but it should be creating art because it wouldn't have been created otherwise. Yeah, these things that wouldn't exist, and there is some audience for them.
Yeah, you're never going to have the Trocadero on Leicester Square, yeah, seven stories or whatever it was of fucking video games ever again.
Yeah.
Because people can play games at home and things, but that doesn't mean there isn't environments where if you're into that, there are places you can go and engage, yeah, in that and enjoy it. It's fine that it's not a multi-million dollar thing.
Yeah,
that isn't,
yeah,
what success or value is.
Yeah,
that isn't,
yeah,
that it doesn't have to be that. But I think we got so blinded by the idea that you've got to,
it's got to be this huge thing. I always remember, and it's a good example to kind of leave it on, but I mentioned a Jim Smallman earlier, and he's got a wrestling company, as I mentioned a lot. I go to him a lot, Progress Wrestling, and I talked to him because I went to one. I was like, have you ever talked on about doing it on TV or anything else? This is like, he's like, mate, at the moment, we do it once a month in Camden, 700 cap, which is mind-blowing to us, and it sells out in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
It's like, that's enough.
It
doesn't have to be competing with the WWE or on TV or whatever else. It's like, that's enough. I love it. I do it with my mates. Everyone that comes absolutely adores it. We've not got those people who are there because they've been told it's good and not enjoying it. It's the people who love it. And that's enough. It's the same with podcasting.
Yeah.
Again, I
know Jim quite well because Jim, I know from the comedy circuit and things over here. He actually did a video gaming live shop in Edinburgh a few years ago called Gamer Gamer, which was great. And he was a brilliant host of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Because he's a massive
gamer.
Tattoos of loads of his gamers. Yeah.
But the Progress Wrestling thing is a perfect example is that he did that out of passion and he's built this thing up and it's fucking incredible.
Yeah.
And like you said, everyone who's going to it is exactly the thing they want it to be. The people who are running it and managing to make a living off that and making it work, why let someone who's never been to a wrestling match in their fucking life, but happens to have an important job in telly, ruin it?
Yeah.
For the sake of what? Everybody involved in it who's passionate about it is getting what they want out of it.
Yeah, it's working.
It doesn't have to be on the fucking telly.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be. Yeah. It's not actually the be all and end all.
Completely. I've been saying it a lot recently because I'm getting more and more kind of approaches from different areas.
Of course you are.
I have people ask about the podcast and like, it'd be great if you did it as a TV show. This, that, it's like,
be fucking dreadful.
It is what it's meant to be. It's already achieving it. I get to live the dream of this particular project because it's got there and it's continuing there. It's not everything has to be a means to an end. It has to be a stepping stone to becoming this. It's there. It exists.
The desperation to appropriate it is horrific.
Yeah, it's crazy. Well, thank you very much for inviting me
in.
And
do it like this.
Exactly. It's the way it should be. So where can people keep up to date on Wi-Fi Wars and all the other ones you kind of mentioned?
There's so much stuff in there and there's other stuff I've not even touched on. But if you go to Steve McNeil, stevemcneil.co.uk, all my stuff's on there. So
perfect.
Just use
and
that as
you're on Twitter and all over the place and Twitch and everything. So thank you very much for chatting. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Cheers, man.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Discretion Pieces.
There we go. That was episode 194 of the Distraction Pieces podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Guys, I've got to warn you, I am bringing the fire when it comes to podcast in the coming weeks and months. As I record this intro, I've got back on this. I'm recording it on the Saturday. I recorded a podcast this morning. I recorded a podcast last night. Both of them are two of the best I've done and two of the most important I've ever done. Tomorrow is Sunday, it's Mother's Day. I'm kicking it with my mum, hanging out. Then at the moment, it looks like I'm going to be recording a podcast on Monday, recording another one on Tuesday, then recording two on Wednesday. And you know I'm all about, after the Rutger Bregman one, you know I'm all about that leisure time, but these are just such good guests that it's impossible to say no to them. I say no to guests all the time. I say no to a lot of guests, but these are all just absolute gold. So I won't say too much until they're out and available, but there's some great ones to come. In fact, I will tell you actually next week's one, because that's recorded. I'm joined by Patrice Couleurs, who was one of the founding members of Black Lives Matter, the movement, the hashtag, everything. And we go in deep with an amazing conversation that you're going to adore.
really powerful stuff from an amazing woman. I was so pleased to get onto her schedule while she was in the UK. She was literally in the UK for a matter of days without a moment spare. So every slot was filled, and I was lucky enough to get in there. The day that I had chatted with her, she had been on BBC TV and BBC Radio that day, and next up was this little old podcast. So delighted with that one, and excited for you all to hear that. But yeah, that is the standard. We're just going out there with some absolute goals. So check that out next week. Subscribe, review, tell your friends, spread the word. I don't say this too often anymore, but it's important. A word of mouth is important. So thank you all for that. End of the month, March 31st, we are back at We Are Lizards at the Book Club. Come along to that. Me, Stu and Chris from Hardcore Listening will be DJing, as will I. We've got Block Party DJ set. We've got DJ Destruction. We've got Push Music. It's going to be gold. So come along to that at the Book Club on March 31st. I'm sure I'll talk about more in the coming weeks. But until then, have a good one, and I'll see you next week. Ta-ta!
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.